For years, Michelle Claire, former president of Scientology's International Humanitarian Organization, tried to reconcile her sexual orientation with the anti-gay ideology of the church. Michelle finally ended her marriage, found the love of her life, a woman, and ultimately left the Church of Scientology. But the split certainly came at a price. Her once pristine reputation was publicly dragged through the mud. The police raided her home, her ex-husband tried to gain full custody of their children, and the multi-million-dollar business she built from scratch was destroyed. In her new memoir, Perfectly Clear, Michelle LeClaire offers an insider's perspective on Scientology's pervasive influence, secret rituals, and ruthless practices for keeping members in line. Again, the name of the new book is Perfectly Clear, Escaping Scientology and Fighting for the Woman I Love. We welcome Michelle LeClaire to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Wonderful to have you. I would think, from an outsider looking in, it would be very difficult for you to make the decision that you want to tell this story to a wide audience.
Yes, it took many years to make that decision. I left the church in 2011, and I decided I was going to go ahead and write my story at the end of 14.
So what goes into that decision, and what do you believe is accomplished by going forward and saying, okay, this is something that people should know, not only about my experience, but about Scientology as a whole?
Well, I think every time I turned around, things were just getting crazier and crazier. And the moment that I officially left the church and decided that I was going to choose love over my religious beliefs, but I even hate calling them a religion now, it was a very difficult decision. But things kept happening to me that I could not make sense of. And I was finding out that there was somebody working in my company that was providing information back to the Church of Scientology. I was finding out that all my records had been copied and illegally distributed to other Scientologists. There were so many things that I couldn't make sense of. And as things kept dwindling down further and further, I felt like I was becoming this conspiracy theorist, and then all of a sudden I would find proof. We would catch the IP addresses. We would catch the information. And finally, one of my attorneys said to me, I think it's very important that you document every single thing that is happening to you along the way, because this has to be happening for a reason, Michelle. And maybe that reason is that you need to tell your story.
What got you into Scientology in the first place? What was it that drew you into Scientology in the first place?
Well, my mother and I moved from Oklahoma when I was 16, and my mother started working for a management consulting company that happened to be one of the largest recruiters to the Church of Scientology. We didn't know anything about Scientology. We didn't know who L. Ron Hubbard was. And when I was 18, I ended up getting in a very bad car accident that I should have died in, and I started questioning things and saying, I must be here for a reason. And my mother walked in my hospital room with a Scientology minister. And I think it was just, sadly, I was at the wrong place at the right time, and Scientology started my path at that time.
You write in the book that they seem to have all the answers to everything.
They do. They have courses for how to have a successful marriage, how to raise children, how to market for a company, personal values and integrity and communication. So when you are very young and you are naive, they prey on that. You're a sponge and you're looking for the map to life. And they tell you that they have that map to life. And in the beginning, it's easy things. And it's things of how to respond to your parents if you're doing something that your parents don't think you should be doing. Or how should you deal with a boyfriend or a girlfriend? And things seem to be very small. And they have acting classes. And your entire life starts to be consumed. All of your friends become Scientologists. Your coworkers become Scientologists. You get your family members into Scientology, and it starts to become something that is surrounding you at every moment.
And that was one of the things that fascinated me about the book. I mean, so 8 years ago, you're a mother of four, you're living in Los Angeles, you're earning millions of dollars, you're the founder of one of the nation's most successful woman-owned life insurance firms. How is it inextricable to take out of how Scientology, because of what you just described, of how Scientology was involved in the creation / success of that business?
Well, Scientology really didn't create the business. I would say what they created was a robot who believed that the only thing that was important in life was the church's definition of success.
Right.
That didn't include love. That didn't include any sort of emotion. That included being very successful at what you do, being very aggressive at what you do, and making sure that everybody knew about it. And so I did exactly as I was taught. I loved insurance. I felt that I was doing something to help people. I was blessed to expand that business into working with very high net worth individuals and celebrities. And so that was something I built on my own. I had very few Scientologists that were clients. But what the church did is they just made you this robot that never stopped, because they knew that if you built a successful company and you became well known, it does two things for them. It provides them with lots of money, and it provides them with contacts that they could safe point Scientology with that they couldn't get to on their own.
And what I was leading to, and I want to get to the other point here in just a few minutes that we have left, but what I was leading to ultimately is they have a financial gain because your success means more money that you're giving to that church, correct?
100%. I gave well over $5 million to the church. There were many times in the beginning when my business, you know, I had not created my own business and I was still working and just making a little bit of money, that they would sit with me and call up my credit card companies and try and get the credit card companies to expand my level and my limit so that I could donate more money to them. Or they would broker a loan inside of the church and get somebody inside of the church to loan me money so that I could make a donation. And it was a money-making machine for them. But I think what's even more sad than them coming after their own members for money, it's what are they doing with this money? Do you see them donating to cancer research or children with disabilities or building hospitals? No, you see them buying a whole bunch of buildings and then spending millions of dollars going after and attacking people like myself or Leah Remini or Mike Rinder or people that have spoken out against the church.
So and unfortunately we only have a minute or two left, but I'm curious because, I mean, much of the book is about the homosexuality and the church's really war on that and your lifestyle. So you fall in love. You're not planning on any of this. You fall in love, right? And
yes.
Then that's when everything becomes quite turbulent in your life. What is it about your life, about the love that you have, that was so disturbing to those at the top in Scientology?
Well, the Church of Scientology will tell you that they have no stance on relationships or homosexuality, which is absolutely false. I mean, all you have to do is pick up one of their books like Dianetics or Science or Survival, for example, where L. Ron Hubbard talks that you should dispose of them quietly and without sorrow. So I believed that I had made it so high in the church. I had donated so much money And I had been doing so much for the church that when I fell in love with a woman, this love opened my eyes, and I was not going to leave her side. But I thought, well, look, the United States had come far, the world has come far in gay rights. I'm going to bring the Church of Scientology into the 21st century, and I'm going to be the rainbow flag-waving Scientologist. They were not going to have that. You have to remember, they believe the gay people are the lowest of the low. They are not going to have one of their top Scientologists in the public eye who is in an openly gay relationship.
Was there anything, was your girlfriend at the time willing to become a member of the church?
No, absolutely not. She was steadfast in her belief, and she's a Christian, and it was, you know, something that would not change for her. She never told me to leave the church. She said it was my own path, my own journey, and she loved me for everything I was. She was worried about me and concerned, but I don't think she knew as much about the Church of Scientology as obviously we know today. And I think she was hoping that I would choose her and freedom and a real life. And of course, I eventually did.
When it comes to that freedom, what changed in that you were finally able to come out and stand up to the church?
Well, I found out quickly that I was not going to be able to have both. And I had really started questioning the church in 2008. I was worried about my children. I had finally escaped from an abusive marriage that they condoned. And I had just been questioning things about their practices, their stance on homosexuality. And I think what really made a difference for me was reading the 17-page article that Paul Haggis did in The New Yorker. And when I saw the things that he laid out that had been done to him and to his daughter, who was gay, I thought to myself, I need to be careful. And strange things were happening to me. Things were disappearing in my company, and files were being copied, and things that I couldn't make sense of. And I knew that the church was behind it, because multiple friends of mine inside of the church were calling me saying, Michelle, the Office of Special Affairs has just launched an investigation on you, and we're very worried.
The investigation was solely over your relationship. It was not it, really right. I mean, there was nothing more to it than the fact that you were having this relationship, and that as a person who was representative of Scientology, that you would tarnish that image, their view.
Yeah, I mean, it was very coincidental. They were taking all the money that they wanted from me prior. And prior to me having a gay relationship, and they had no issues or problems with me prior to that. Date coincidentally, the moment I started a friendship with a gay woman, and then ultimately a relationship, is when the investigation started. So I can't find any other similarity within time of 20 years of having no issue with me. But the moment that I start a relationship with someone who is gay, and I ultimately come out gay, now the church has decided to launch an investigation on me.
So how much of this is a coercion tactic to, I mean, for the perfect thing for them would be for you to say, okay, cut off the relationship, because I'm assuming just in a business practice, they don't want to lose the money that you're donating to them, correct?
They don't want to lose the money, but the other thing you have to realize is they know that they are doing things that are wrong. So the moment that somebody leaves, they're going to talk about it. So their entire goal is to squash your voice. And L. Ron Hubbard wrote a policy called Fair Game, which is if somebody speaks out against the Church of Scientology, Scientologists are allowed to lie, to sue, to harass, or to harm you without any sort of repercussion. And their entire job is to make sure that the public will not listen to your voice. So if they could destroy me in the business world and they could make up lies about me in the business world and ultimately get that in the media,
right,
then nobody will listen to what my true story is. But thank God that, you know, truth prevailed in the end, and love is ultimately what helped me get to that truth. And that is their kryptonite. Love and truth are their kryptonite.
Do you have to leave, or can I keep you for 5 more minutes? Do you know whether you have to leave?
I'm not running the schedule,
okay,
but I think
all right.
I'm okay for me.
Okay, all right.
Somebody may jump in.
Okay. If someone jumps in, fine. And if not, I'm just going to keep going until they make the line dead.
Okay.
So, and I'm sorry, but I just find this all so fascinating. So I just want a couple more minutes just to get this all straight.
Sure.
So how does your mother react to this?
Well, my mother in the beginning didn't believe that this was happening to me. She was very scared about me coming out. She never thought in a million years that they would attack me. It took her about a year to see that this was happening, and because they were coming to her for information. It took her another year after that to believe that the things that I was telling her that were being done were actually being done by the Church of Scientology. So in 2013, I was able to get my mother out, and she lives with me now.
So you have this, for want of a better term, you have this fight with the church. It's a battle. And then you come to the point where you are with the person that you love. You have removed yourself from the church. You go through the years that we were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, where you finally come to the point, the very painful point of, I want to tell this story. And now you're putting yourself back out there. How does the church respond? How do you think they will react? How have they reacted? What kind of backlash do you expect? And, or has that already happened?
Well, it's already happening. You know, look, I'm public enemy number one. I think I may have taken over Leah's spot just for 1 second. You know, Leah and I just talked yesterday. She was like, great, thanks for taking some of the pressure off me, Michelle. Look, Leah has forged the path, and she has been wonderful to expose so many of their lies. But, you know, they're doing to me exactly what they did to her. They followed me everywhere in New York on my media tour. They were in my hotel. They want you to know they're there to intimidate you. They have set up fake websites left, right, and center, and are trying to promote those and get them high up, you know, in Google. And I think that
so what does that mean? Meaning they have fake websites that counter what you are saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. They have labeled me horrible things and say I'm a liar. And they take the false narrative that they tried to promote in my business, and that's what they've put all over the websites. You know, look, the public knows that the Church of Scientology is built on lies. No one believes that stuff. But I think it begs a question, which is, what is the definition of harassment? And I think that it starts to open up a question of, what are we doing as a public when somebody is being utterly destroyed online, or people are following them and harassing them, and there's nothing anyone can do about it? And I think that's something that I am really going to focus on, getting some legislative change happening here.
Do you think, I mean, when you read the book, you get the idea, and this will be my final question, but when you read the book, you get the idea that this isn't sustainable anymore. But I guess you could ask.
I don't believe it is.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I guess you could say that about a lot of religions that are going through horrible things right now.
Well, look, you know, you take the big religions, there are millions of people involved in those religions. The Church of Scientology is lucky if they have 20,000 to 30,000 people left in the church. That's not a lot of people when you compare that to the world population. And so I think what's happened is there's been a big cork that has been put in the hole of people falling down into the hole of Scientology. And eventually, the people that are inside of the church are going to have so much pressure on them to keep donating more and more money that I think they will slowly start to drift away. If this book and my story can stop one person from walking in that door, if it can help one person leave, if it can help one person walk out of an abusive relationship, or that one person can realize you can lose everything in your life and you can rebuild it again, but always choose love first. That's what I hope it does.
Well, Michelle LeClaire, the book is quite incredible. It's called Perfectly Clear, Escaping Scientology and Fighting for the Woman I Love. Former president of Scientology's International Humanitarian Organization, separated from the church in 2011 and now the author of Perfectly Clear. Michelle, I thank you very much for sharing with us, and best of luck in your journey forward.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.